UK Wine Show, show number 53. English Wine with Julia Trastramieve. G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 53 for the 1st of June 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and with English Wine Week in full steam, we're talking with Julia Trastramieve, the Marketing Manager of English Wine Producers, the English Wine Marketing Board. We talk about current issues, including English Wine Week, how the new Brussels legislation may be putting the brakes on English wine, global warming, and the future of English wine. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, the UK 2006 vintage is the biggest ever, and how a glass a day may delay dementia. But first, Australian producer Chandon is releasing more of its Green Point sparkling wine, sealed with crown caps as opposed to corks. Crown caps are effectively beer bottle tops and used on all sparkling wine, including champagne. The company want to avoid the problem of cork taint and uneven aging, which causes bottle variation. Rather than turning to screw caps to replace the cork, the obvious solution was to stick with the crown seal. While it's a shame not to hear the popping of the cork, it does make a lot of sense. But my bet is that it will remain unique in the market for some time before others dare to dispose of the traditional champagne cork. Meanwhile, the UK has produced the third highest volumes on record for its 2006 vintage. According to figures just released, last year's harvest will produce a staggering 3.3 million bottles. The number of hectares under vine has also increased from the previous year, from 793 to 923 hectares, and 12 more vineyards were established, taking the total to 362. Don't forget, English Wine Week ends on Sunday the 3rd of June. For more information, you can visit the website at englishwineweek.co.uk. And finally, this week, a study in Italy has found that one alcoholic drink a day may slow the onset of dementia in older people who already suffer from mild memory loss. The study followed 121 people aged 65 to 84 over 3 years. Those who had up to one drink of alcohol a day developed dementia at an 85% slower rate than the people who consumed no alcohol at all. And those people were consuming mostly wine. The study didn't find any link between consuming more than one drink a day and a greater, slower of progression to dementia, so it is definitely not a green light to drink more. That's all for this week's news, but 60 years ago, in 1947, large quantities of German wine were transported to Alsace for bottling. Due to the war, there were no facilities in Germany, and so the wine was bottled in Alsace in traditional Alsatian bottles. Growers strongly denied that any of the German wine was ever blended with their own French wine. For more details on any of these stories, check out the news homepage on our website at 3050.co.uk. That's it from me this week. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. Quite a bit going on. Greenpoint going under Crown Seal is interesting. In fact, next week's show, I'm going to be interviewing the CEO of Greenpoint and Cloudy Bay and Cape Mentel, Tony Jordan, and find out why they've gone down that route of Crown Seal. But this week, we're in the middle of English Wine Week. And we ask, as English wine is on the brink of breaking through to the mainstream of the UK consumer, why are there clouds on the horizon? English wine reminds me a bit like the feeling in New Zealand in the 1980s. There are 7 to 8 really good producers of international standard, with many people starting to realise there's a business here. I think New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc was almost impossible to stop. However, New Zealand didn't have to deal with Brussels. And with English wine, the ride may not be as easy. Let's get an up-to-date look at English Wine with Julia Trastramieve, Marketing Manager of English Wine. Hi, I'm here with Julia Trastramieve, the Marketing Manager of English Wine Producers. How are you, Julia?
I'm fine, thanks very much, Chris.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about English Wine Producers and what's really been going on in English Wine over the last 13 or so years. How did you guys start out?
Well, I can't believe actually that it's been about 13 years already, but it started out really just as a group of the then larger producers, which included Denby's Wine Estate, Lamberhurst Vineyards, you might remember, or a number of your listeners will remember, Three Choirs, Valley Vineyards, what's now called Stanlake Park, and two or three others. And it was really at the time when they were starting to get commercial. I think Denby's Wine Estate was the one that really proved to be the catalyst. One of the partners there in the setup of Denby's wine estate was South African and involved in a wine estate in South Africa. So he had a lot of, you know, ideas as to what to do in terms of marketing wines. And they wanted to get together to go to what was then called the London Wine Trade Fair, the big trade show in London once a year. And in order to do that, we needed to put money into some coffers and to get going. So that's really kind of how it started. And they needed somebody to do a little bit of publicity for it, just send out the odd press release. I luckily happened to be available then. I was working for an English vineyard at the time and got very enthusiastic about it and was just overwhelmed, really, in the next sort of year or so, just how great the response was from particularly the wine press and the wine trade, because they were hearing about Denby's Wine Estate and Lamberhurst and Three Choirs and thought, this is great. Now we've got to, you know, an organisation that we can turn to and get a bit of information from. And it's kind of rollercoasted from there, actually.
I suppose it's quite different. Back then, you would have been more trying to get the word out about English wine.
Absolutely right, yes. And then, I mean, that was, so if that was 13 years ago, fairly shortly after then, of course, we then had the arrival of the sparkling wines, which, of course, have been just taking the wine world by storm, says she modestly. And that was Nye Timber, and followed after them by Ridgeview. But, of course, Nye Timber came straight into the scene, started to win international awards from the word go, and then people really got to grips with some headlines there.
And that's been brilliant, because it's been driving the sparkling wine and a lot of the current developments in the southeast of England.
I think that's right, absolutely. First and foremost, obviously driving the quality sparkling wine sector of English wines. But I think just generally for English wines as a reputation, I think it grew and grew when they suddenly realised that here was this country, particularly the southeast of England, producing some wines that were world class, that were doing some really serious, serious good things. And you're right, I mean, the biggest area of growth is the sparkling wine sector. And I think that's really how it's going to carry on for a number of years to come.
What do you think the problems now are? Because it's not really about telling the world, well, at least in England, we know about English wine. What's the big problem with English wine at the moment?
I think the biggest problem actually is fulfilling demand, because demand has grown and grown. Sales have been experiencing a growth of, I would say, around 15 to 20% growth year on year over the last few years. In some cases it's been even higher than that, if the figures that I've been getting is anything to go by. We are planting quite a bit at the moment, but we're going through a rather curious phase, which I don't think many other wine producing countries are faced with, which is not enough wine to sell. You know, we can sell very easily what we produce. As you say, people are much more aware about English wines now in the domestic market, and really the majority of what we produce is sold in the UK. A little bit of export, but not very much at the moment.
Have you got any figures on planting? How much has gone in the ground in the last couple of years?
Right. Well, I mean, from some of the official figures that we've got, we know that since in 2005, which is when the latest official figures come from, we were aware that there were 1,959 acres under vine. Now, in 2005, 2006, and as far as we know, in 2007, around about 626 additional acres has been planted. Now, you can see that represents a fair rise.
It's almost 25%
increase.
Yeah,
something like that, exactly. And, you know, we're pretty confident that this is a trend that's going to set to continue. I mean, you know, we're looking that actually our forecast to 2015 is that 870-odd acres will have been planted. That obviously includes the 626. Quite a lot going on.
We ran a story in late March about England's about to become a official wine producing nation, and we're not allowed to be able to plant anymore. What's going on there?
Things are changing quite a lot at the moment. You'll be aware that the European wine laws are changing, and they're going to be undergoing extensive changes right across the board. We are an official EU wine producing region.
At the moment?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, England and Wales. So therefore, we will be subjected to rules and regs, obviously coming from Europe. I think it's down to the individual governments to interpret the European wine laws to suit the actual needs and within each country, each member state. So we are currently an official EU wine-producing country. Quite a lot has been going on since the last wine laws were enforced. And one thing that was enforced on us was a planting ban. At the time, it was never going to be a problem. And at the moment, it's not too huge a crisis. We're not that worried yet. Basically, if we exceed production of 26,000 hectolitres or above, then over a consecutive period of 3 years, then a planting ban will be enforced. But we've never actually reached the 26,000 hectolitre limit in 3 years consecutively. We've hit 26,000 hectolitres in the past, but just, you know, as one-offs.
Yep.
So we'll keep an eye on it. But the ban at the moment is enforced until 2010. Obviously, as I said, we've undergone quite a lot of planting in the last 2-3 years, but they're not going to come into production until then or just after then. So we should be okay. It's obviously a very topical issue for us. And the UK Vineyards Association, which is the internal body for the industry, which represents the interests of the growers, is currently in discussions with DEFRA, who obviously are going to be representing us at European level. And the planting ban is really one of the key issues that we have taken forward.
Okay, how do you think your approach will be different this time to the new set of laws that are going to be argued about in Brussels?
Well, I think there's a much greater knowledge and understanding of how we want to regulate our wines. You'll be aware that for still wines, we have a quality wine scheme. We have our own Appellation Controlling. And so we have English Vineyards Quality Wine, PSR, produced mm-hmm. in a specific region, and we have English Regional Wine. Any wine that doesn't go through, still wine that is, any wine that doesn't go through either of those schemes is labelled UK table wine. And it's not at the moment permitted to put the vintage, the vineyard name or the varietal. So obviously it is in a lot of English vineyards' interest to put their wines through the quality or regional wine scheme. It's like the Appellation Controller. It's kind of an official verification. I think our knowledge now of how the market works, of what our wines are, where we stand and all the rest of it, I think will certainly help us to put some good labelling rules to the English wine.
So there's a mixture of increasing, possibly trying to get through the planting ban, but also you want to change the way the labelling laws are in place.
I think so, just to make it as simple as possible, you know, just to make it as easy as possible for those growers, particularly at the moment, as we were saying earlier on, you know, when a vineyard produces its wine, it actually wants to go and sell it. It doesn't want to spend a long time going through a minefield of forms and an application and all the rest of it. But I think, you know, we have a very good team there to help us from within the industry, and I think between us we can put something that suits us well.
English Wine Week's 26th of May through to the 3rd of June. Yep. Is there anything new this year that you've done that you haven't done in previous years?
I think it's just building up year on year what we've been doing, which the whole point of English Wine Week really is, it's twofold really. One is to encourage vineyards to actively promote their wines and in some cases their vineyards by attracting people on site and showing them what they've got and selling direct, but actually also to encourage the wine trade. Mm-hmm. And actually by that I also mean the restaurant trade, the hotel trade as well, to perhaps use English Wine Week as an excuse to promote some English wines. You know, there is so much going on now, which is really exciting with regional food and drink generally. And a lot of outlets out there are supporting regionally produced food and drink. And here's a good opportunity for them to, you know, just wave the flag a little bit for English wines, put it slightly on a, you know, on a pedestal, if you like, and promote it. And we've found enormous success with that.
So you're trying to get the trade more involved for English Wine Week. Are you doing anything particular for the trade in London or anywhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the first time this year, we're moving out of the wine heartlands in the south of England, and we're going to be hosting a trade tasting in Manchester. We will also be running our traditional London tasting as well. Always happens around St George's Day, and for very obvious reasons. But we're really excited because we have, over the last sort of year or so, been receiving quite a number of inquiries from the trade further and further north. And we thought, well, it was time to dip a toe in the water and see how it goes. So we're very excited about that. In fact, I might add that, you know, who knows in years to come, but there are some vineyards that have just been planted outside York. So the vineyards are moving a little bit further north too, so we may as well be prepared. The trade tasting has obviously taken place in April, and that's really where we kind of introduce all the new wines and the current currently available wines. And it's about a month before English Wine Week itself. And, you know, we find that's quite a sort of seasonal thing because a lot of English wines, of course, are absolutely ideal for summer drinking. And English Wine Week falls always in that last week in May, which is the last May bank holiday. So there's an awful lot of opportunity to do things over that May bank holiday, both if you're a vineyard and you can open your doors, or if you're you're a wine shop or something, you know, it's a good opportunity. People are out and about. It's half-term holiday in a lot of schools, so perhaps people are taking some time out and out there. Let's hope that the weather continues to be great, and it also spells the beginning of the tourist season as well, because of course, you know, one big area that's developing in English wines, in the English wine industry, is wine tourism. And this is the start of the summer season.
You mentioned earlier that there's been a lot of, when you first kicked off 13 years ago, there was a lot of media interest. English wine seems to be almost like a good news story for global warming as well. I do some tastings and I tell everybody, you know, if you want to help English wine, throw out your fluorescent bulb and put in a nice incandescent and use up a bit more power.
That's one approach, I guess, yes.
Do you want to touch on your position in terms of global warming and English wine?
I think we've sort of moved away from the frippery, which actually I would call a few years ago, where a colleague of mine was consistently being asked. I think it was when we had that really hot summer back in 2003, maybe it was even before then, and he was getting sick to death of the questions about, you know, is this going to change the whole image for English wines and all the rest of it. He said, look, in 50 years time, Bordeaux is going to be a desert wasteland, and England will be producing the finest red wine in the world, and Scandinavia will be producing the really fine white wine. So we'll see. You know, we've got 50 years to sort of hang around and see what happens. I think global warming has been a very good news story in the sense that it has really turned people's attentions to what England is currently producing. I personally feel that it is not a direct impact of global warming, that English wines have improved as much as they have and that we are producing such fine wines. I think the majority of that has been down to expertise and know-how. You know, we're an industry that's only about 50 years old, and the first sort of the modern commercial industry has only been around really for about 50 years. And the first sort of three decades or so, you know, were interesting, but not hugely commercial. Mm. I think there has been so much change in the last 20 years. And in that 20 years, of course, education has improved enormously in terms of winemaking. Yeah, Plumpton College is absolutely at the forefront of it. And I was really pleased to see an article not that long ago, a year or two back, about Plumpton, identifying how some students have gone abroad and they're actually making wines in other parts of the world as well. So it's not just the UK that's been benefiting.
Yeah. We did a story with Plumpton beginning of the year.
Oh, fantastic.
So if anybody wants to have a listen to that.
That's great. There's some really exciting things going on at Plumpton. And I think that also, of course, with that expertise has come a much, much better and in-depth knowledge of what grapes suit our climate. And we have absolutely identified that one of the big successes is sparkling wines. We can grow those traditional varieties. We do have a good climate. We do have some excellent soil, and we've got all the equipment as well. And I think the same thing goes for some of our still white wines, which I don't think we should ever forget. The big surge in interest and expansion of the industry as well has been in sparkling wines, but we do produce some really great, still crisp, fresh, aromatic, clean white wines.
Bacchus
we were talking about earlier, and it's just a lovely grape variety. So there's a lot to look forward to, I think, in the still wine sector, and rosé wines as well, some very interesting rosé wines coming out too.
We had a news article that came out in the beginning of April, I think, about Richard Seeley, the geologist that worked with Denbys. Giving Cotswolds, saying, you know, there might be an area there that could be quite good for grape growing. You know, a lot of people talking about the southeast, but there are other areas. Where would you think might be
some potentially very interesting developments in the southwest? You know,
areas such as
Dorset, Somerset, Devon. Now, Devon, we were talking about English Wine Week. Devon has been doing some really exciting things, and this is what I would love to see develop perhaps in other parts of the country. But as it so happens, there is a cluster of vineyards down in and around Exeter. And for English Wine Week, they have devised their own Devon Wine Week. And with that, they have put together a Devon Wine Trail. So if you're down in Devon, which, of course, let's face it, at this time of year is a gorgeous place to be, and if you're on holiday, half-term, whatever, you can actually visit a number of vineyards all around, and they're holding something on every single day of English Wine Week. Some slightly new and different and unusual activities, but actually also some very new vineyards are opening up for the first time too. So it's really exciting what's going on down there. So we're going to have our own little sort of wine Groom Trail going on down there. As I said, you know, the West Country, East Anglia, I think there's certainly a lot of potential. There have been vineyards there for a number of years now. Interesting things going on there. And the Midlands and the West Midlands as well. There are some good little pockets there that we should keep an eye out for too. But the big development that's actually happened that we can say has been going on is in the southeast.
Yeah, excellent. I think we'll wrap it up there, Julia. Thanks so much.
Great pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Julia. Things are getting pretty interesting here. There's been a lot of talk in the trade press about planting restrictions coming into force in the next few years. And that's been encouraging some of the players to be planting grapes in less than optimum positions, hoping to get the grapes in the ground before the ban kicks in. I hope not, because in a marginal climate like England, you can't really afford to be in a bad location. And if they are planting in less than optimum sites, all it's going to do in the long run is produce poor quality wine, which could be a bit of a boom-bust cycle again for the English wine. On a different topic, thanks very much, people who have been sending me some feedback. I had an email from Tony Haywood this week. He was living in the UK, but now has moved out to Margaret River in West Australia. And he asks how he can download the show to his MP3 player. He wants to download it and listen to it on his MP3 player while at work emptying barrels and filtering wine. Probably the least technical way to do it, Tony, is to plug your MP3 player into your computer. I assume it comes up as a drive, say, such as G Drive in Windows Explorer, assuming you're in a PC. Then go to the ukwineshow.co.uk. Each show's got a link that says, click here to listen to the show. Just right-click on that and select Save Link As. Specify where on your MP3 player you want to save it and press Save. And voila, it should download off the internet straight onto your MP3 player, ready for you to listen to. You may need to specify a particular folder in your MP3 player, but each one's different, and I really can't give you too much advice on that. Personally, I use iTunes and an iPod to listen to other shows that are going out, and that's really good because it's really easy. All I have to do is subscribe to the show in iTunes, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then what happens is when a new show is released, my computer detects it, downloads it onto the hard drive, and then when I get around to plugging in my iPod to recharge the batteries, it automatically copies the files across and syncs everything up beautifully. All I have to do is remember to charge the batteries. If you want to subscribe to iTunes, there's a couple of ways of doing it. The easiest way is to make sure you've got iTunes installed, and it is free, so just search on iTunes and Apple and you'll be able to get a copy of it for free. Then go to our website, ukwineshow.co.uk, and at the top there's an icon that says iTunes. If you double-click on that, it'll ask you a couple of questions and should start to install the feed from our website to iTunes so it automatically gets downloaded onto your hard drive when a new show gets released. You may need to copy the files across to your computer. If you listen to 3 or 4 different podcasts, it's an easy way to get them all in one place, so all you have to do is drag and drop them onto your MP3 player. Alternatively, you can find our shows in iTunes by going to the iTunes store, select podcast, then under categories in the next list, select arts, then under more arts, select food. You should see the icon with us there, and if you just double click on that, it'll take you through and you can then push a button that says subscribe. You can still use iTunes to download shows automatically, even if you don't have an iPod. You just need to remember to copy them over to your MP3 player using Explorer, again, assuming you've got PC. iTunes is what we call an RSS aggregator. Bit technical, I know, but in a nutshell, all it does is we publish a file with a list of all the shows on our website. All an RSS aggregator does is go to that file and see if there's any new shows there. If it does, then it normally just downloads the show in the background without you needing to worry about it. If you want to use another type of RSS aggregator, there's heaps out there. And on our website, we have another RSS link with a picture called XML. Just use that link in another type of RSS aggregator. I know it sounds a bit technical, but it's once you've set it up and it's running, it's really, really easy to listen to shows on the move. If anybody's using something different and they want to send me some instructions, I'm more than happy. I'll probably put a link up on our website under UK Wine Show somewhere near the top to give instructions on how you might set this up. So do keep a lookout for that. If you've got any other questions, please ask, and also include things that you'd like to cover in the show in more detail. I have a couple of themes that I like to cover. Last year's were things like UK wine, obviously. Screw caps, we've touched on quite a bit. In future shows, we're going to be looking more at things like global warming and terroir. I've got a few of these shows already in the can, so to speak, so we'll be releasing them later on in the year. But if you want us to cover anything else in more detail, just give me a yell. My email address is chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. So, until next week, when we're talking with Tony Jordan, CEO of Cape Mentau, Cloudy Bay and Greenpoint, on why he's released his sparkling Greenpoint wines under a crown seal, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griff to Jingle One by Marcel de la Jatelle and Silence by Etoile Noire.